Governor Holcomb unveils his legislative agenda. He also says no to tolling Indiana's interstates. That, plus lawmakers express frustration with the governor, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 7th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Governor Eric Holcomb unveiled his 2019 legislative agenda, which plans a lot of small steps forward on priorities he's focused on since taking office.
Workforce and economic development have long been at the top of Governor Holcomb's priorities, and his latest agenda, like previous ones, includes several business tax credits and training grant expansions. But Holcomb rejects the notion he's just nibbling around the edges of the issues.
There is no silver bullet. It's like an Indy race car where you're constantly tweaking to get a higher performance out of it.
A notable new addition to Holcomb's agenda, passing a hate crimes law. And he says he prefers one that includes gender identity, which has been a sticking point in the debate. But he won't say whether he'll sign a bill without that language.
I don't want to start negotiating the final outcome of a bill before day one.
Holcomb's teacher pay raise plan is to create a framework this year with actual increases in the 2021 state budget.
Does Holcomb's agenda lack a big, bold idea? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Phil Johnson, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Phil Johnson, is there a big idea here?
Big idea, no. Bold, yes. I think with 91% of Indiana school superintendents reporting some sort of teacher shortage or reporting that, I think it's bold that the governor's solution to that strategy was punting it for 2 years. I think it's bold that when we're talking about when we have an embarrassingly small number of children in pre-K, the governor's solution to that is, again, punting it till 2021. Look, I think 2021 is going to be a great year. It sounds like it's going to be great. But Hoosier families are facing real issues today in 2018, and the governor's agenda really didn't address any of those.
Is this one statement from Democratic House Leader Phil Giaquinta? Said this is a sort of caretaker agenda. Is that what this was?
I think if you look at one of the big things happening in state government right now, we're doing a complete overhaul of DCS. The legislature doesn't need to be involved in the details of that overhaul, but they do need to be involved in the funding of it, right? So that portion has to be in this legislative agenda. At NDOT, they've got a record number of dollars that available to them to accelerate I-69, to finish US 31, and do things we've been talking about for 40 years, in part. So if you look at kind of around state government, there are big things happening. We've talked about workforce. All these governors have tried workforce. There's been no measurable improvement. And then we get the legislative agenda and it focuses on workforce. And guys like us just yawn at it because we're so tired of talking about it. But maybe consistency of investment in that area is what will change it and what will lead Governor Holcomb to be more successful than maybe his predecessors in improving Indiana's workforce. Accelerating the superintendent, the appointment of the superintendent. That was incredibly controversial 2 years ago. It's in this agenda. So there are some big things in here. I mean, you walk into any state house in the country and go, hey, where I'm from, we just passed our eighth straight balanced budget, and they're like, how are you doing that? So I mean, there's stuff here that like the political smart alecks like us go, man, there's just no big idea, because we're just so used to economic development, workforce relocation. We're so used to like landing an Infosys when they look in the Western Hemisphere to relocate an office, and they pick Plainfield of all places, right? And that's all
Do you
because
have something
and that's
Plainfield
all no, that's all because of the things that are in this agenda and already in law that the governor's working on.
Specifically on workforce development, because that was something the governor said that the IndyCar analogy, where you're not changing the whole engine, you're tweaking little things. Is that actually in and of itself the way things have been going, a big idea? That we don't need to just start from scratch all over again for the 50 millionth
time?
Well,
it's a strategy that he has used effectively in last session, for instance. He put a premium on well-functioning government and dealing with some of the issues, whether it was water infrastructure failures or roadway improvements, bridge, fixing sort of the outdated technology that many of the agencies in the state were dealing with. I wonder if in some ways voters have been so whipsawed by what purports to be big proposals. I'm talking now at the federal level as well. You know, we're going to dramatically change this. We're going to dramatically change that. We're throwing this out. We're throwing this in. Maybe there is some appreciation for let's just have government that functions and functions well. I mean, this avoids the social issues as he has in the past.
Except for one. Well, which could be the thing that dominates most discussion.
Let me continue you use the IndyCar analogy. So I'm no expert. I've never driven quite that fast, at least as I'm willing to admit. But ground effects, you're familiar with that, of course. The way when you're tweaking that vehicle, trying to get it to go faster, one way is to make sure that it hugs the track, because those wings and those need to be set properly, because what happens if you aim too high, the wings aim too high, air gets under it, you go airborne, you flip, and bad things happen. So in some ways, now I know this is straining the analogy, but this is about using ground effects.
So we're
very long.
So we're
trying to keep the car on the track, not taking air under it, which would really cause things to flip.
So unlike Mitch Daniels, we shouldn't aim higher, is basically what I'm hearing.
Stay on track.
I'm stuck in low gear.
I tried the best I could with the analogy.
I think some people, I would say it's a steady, kind of a slow, steady progress. And some people, of course, say that wins the race. I don't know. But I will say, I mean, that the hate crimes issue is definitely going to be an interesting conversation, and we'll see how far he's willing to put himself out there.
You know, in the teacher pay piece specifically, we did the same approach with state police was how they approached it a couple years ago, where they said, we've got to update the matrix. But they needed 18 months to build it in. It's a big number, and the Democrats, I know, are going to say all session, we should be spending money out of surplus to increase teacher pay. Well, that gets you that's like getting a $1,000 bonus at work and buying a $20,000 car.
Police,
you make three payments on it.
But if I remember correctly, those state police pay raises started immediately and then built over time
Then they went and had to amend had to change the matrix in 2017, so the increase would be consistent over time.
It's not a new issue either. So. This isn't something that just came out of nowhere. We've known about this for a while, so we've had some time to find a strategy for this. Two, we're talking about settling, and we've got supermajorities in the legislature of 48th in quality of life. We have a chance to do some big things here. Let's do those big things.
Well, I think the priority right now is DCS, as it should be, because of the issues that they've had this year. So they're building in another $200, $300 million.
Yeah, it's
going to
gobble up a lot.
And that's the whole margin of new revenue.
Well, Governor Eric Holcomb announced recently he will not move forward with a plan to toll Indiana's interstate highways.
The comprehensive 2017 road funding bill required a study of tolling. The results suggest tolls on major highways could help ensure long-term sustainable road funding, especially as current revenues from gas taxes begin to decline. But the study also says such a system would be complicated and take a long time to set up, at least 4 years to collect the first toll, and decades to fully flesh out a statewide system. Governor Holcomb says Indiana's current road needs are adequately funded by that 2017 bill, and he says while he won't pursue tolling, he had the Department of Transportation create a strategic plan for future leaders to consider.
Mike O'Brien, is this short-sighted?
Yes, because it was designed to be. This is a short. There's a long-term road funding plan that was passed in 2017, a 30-year plan. We're looking ahead 30 years on the new sources of revenue that they've added in the new revenue mix. To finance the maintenance and construction of roads for the next, for decades to come. Part of that was a conversation in the legislature about what's the threshold point or the tipping point where we have a substantial number, which we don't now, of electric cars on the road. We have a substantial number of vehicles that aren't paying into that system because fundamentally the way we finance it has been on consumption of fuel. So when that begins to change, we are going to have to transition, but nobody thinks that's going to be in the next 4 years or 5 years or 10 years. I mean, we'll have a heads up on when that's beginning to erode, and as long as gas is $2 a gallon, and OPEC's just cranking out oil like they are right now, and it's actually becoming a problem that oil is so low, the manufacturers have no incentive to start pumping these. We can't make Toyota Tundras fast enough here.
We just a year and a half, almost 2 years ago, we passed a huge road funding bill that in among other things, raised taxes and fees, which Democrats have enjoyed pointing out.
Never heard that before.
So was saying no to tolling for right now the right idea?
So I think the most interesting thing about this story is the criticism that the governor is getting from his own party on this issue. The architect of that long-term plan that you mentioned, State Rep Soliday, is the one pointing out that that funding is going to erode, I believe he's saying 2024. So that's much sooner than we have, than we're saying. It's not 10 years down the road. That's quite a bit sooner. I think we're going to have a problem with funding the, with funding these projects. And yes, I think that this is short-sighted.
The, as Phil just pointed out, there is the expectation, even in the governor's report, is that, or NDOT's report, is that about middle of the next decade will be when we start to see that that funding go back down because of a lot of different factors. That would be if he's reelected right when Governor Eric Holcomb leaves office. Is that just a huge coincidence?
No, I mean, look, adding tolls to existing highways has to be one of the most unpopular things I've ever seen discussed in the state. I think Hoosiers, I don't know that a lot of Hoosiers care about whether it's six lanes border to border. I don't know that they care so much about adding lanes. I just think they want what we have to be in good shape. And we're always talking about adding, 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 instead of just, you know, keeping what we have in a positive way.
When we had the big road funding discussion, though, 2 years ago, roughly 2 years ago, a lot of it was we had kicked the can down the road for a long time and so needed to play catch-up. Is that what we're threatening to do on tolling? That, well, we'll do it later, and then when we really need it, it'll still be 5 years away.
Maybe, but this is political reality. We all like to think that, you know, the adult thing to do when you're in governance is look ahead at the next generation, get a mechanism in place that will solve these problems long term, whether it's education funding or road funding, and let's do a 10-year plan, a 20-year plan. The reality is, and I'm not knocking the General Assembly, no elected official, especially those who serve in 2 or 4 year increments, they're not physically capable of actually, they may pass it and enact it, but the notion that, and I'm talking about every state in the country and the federal government. The notion that they would
the federal government like days at a time.
The notion that they would stick with this. How many times across the country have we seen programs that, well, this is going to build in a steady stream of revenue for our grandchildren, and as soon as there's a shifting priority or a downturn in the economy, guess what? That fund is raided, and we've changed. So it's silly. It would be folly, really, to pursue that. I think this is the political reality. And had he proposed tolling, think what it would have
idea.
That would have been a big, bold idea, and think what that would have done. It would have spoiled the lead on today's show.
That's true. Well, thank goodness for that, at least. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, is it the right move for Governor Holcomb to say no to new tolling on Indiana interstates during his tenure? A yes or B no? Last week's question, will a hate crimes bill pass in the 2019 legislative session? 28% say yes, 46% say no, and 26% say it's too early to tell. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, lawmakers expressed some frustration this week at Governor Eric Holcomb and his unilateral renegotiation of the Indiana toll road lease.
The new toll road lease will generate $1 billion new dollars for the state over the next 2 years. The money will come from increased tolls on trucks, and it will pay for major road projects, rural broadband, trails, and direct international flights. Democratic Representative Greg Porter wonders why the legislature wasn't even consulted.
We were major players at one point as a General Assembly, and it seems like we're not now.
The Holcomb administration notes state law allows the governor to renegotiate the lease on his own. Republican Senator Ryan Mishler says that can change.
I feel there has to be some legislative oversight on this lease agreement. I don't think we can just keep opening it up and then finding out about it.
Mishler says lawmakers will also likely scrutinize how the Holcomb administration will spend the new $1 billion.
Nikki Kelly, is this a bit of a rebuke by the governor or of the governor by lawmakers?
Say it's a mild one. And to be fair, I don't blame lawmakers. You know, they're getting ready to sit down to pass a $30 billion budget in which they don't have enough money for teacher pay or DCS or adding school safety money. And, you know, here we got, oh, I just found $1 billion and I'm going to use it for, you know, my priorities. And not only that, but do it in a way that you didn't even give them a heads up. I mean, that just really comes across badly.
Yeah. Is this, it'll be forgotten in a few months or does this one?
Yeah. It will be. This is some venting now. Again, I think it's understandable. Lawmakers, elected officials like to feel that they are aware of what's happening with the state's purse strings. I think where this becomes makes a transition from some venting to a true rebuke is if at some point during the session there was some effort to undo the priorities that were established in terms of, you know, broadband development and infrastructure improvements and
trails,
the notion of, you know, trail systems that would connect a lot of our communities. If that all got thrown out and in its place said, you know, we're instead going to, would be, just anything.
Statewide pre-K.
There you go.
Maybe.
The rumor begins here. Watch it. If that happened, then that's a serious rebuke, and that's not going to happen.
The legislature gave the governor of this state, not Governor Eric Holcomb, the governor's office, a lot of power over the last several years. Is this the sort of inevitable slight clawing back of some of that power?
Maybe, but they may think they want to claw back the right to raise tolls, but they don't. And the reason during major moves, and one of the true incentives of leasing the toll road to begin with was the tolls hadn't been raised in 30 years. There was $250 million of debt sitting on that road. And it cost 40 cents to collect a quarter because it cost the state 40 cents to collect a quarter because the legislature controlled the toll rates and politically never wanted to go in and adjust them. So the legislature during major moves said, we don't want any of these decisions. IFA, NDOT, governor's office, you go make these decisions, not us, because they shouldn't be in a legislative political arena where you'll never touch them again.
Yeah, and that's the governor's office has said. Listen, what they did with the toll road lease is exactly how it was designed to happen. Is it the right design?
See, I think it'll be interesting. I think, all due respect, John, I think you're wrong here. I think when they're hammering out the budget
that's
details...
You're right.
When
they're, you're right. As an American.
But I don't think they're going to forget this. When the House and Senate and the governor's office are negotiating a deal on the budget, I don't think this gets forgotten. I think that it's very interesting to see Republican budget writers come out and say they're very cautious about what they say in public and what they say on record. So I think it's very interesting to see this happen. I don't think it's the last time.
I didn't think
we'll see
your caucus would forget it. I'm talking about the supermajorities in both chambers.
All right. Well, Secretary of State Connie Lawson this week told the State Budget Committee she wants money in the next budget to replace a small portion of the state's voting machines that don't have paper backups.
About 40% of Indiana counties have voting machines that don't create a paper backup, and election security experts stress the need for such backups to help ensure voting integrity. Secretary of State Connie Lawson wants $10 million in the state's upcoming two-year budget to replace just 10% of the voting machines without paper backups. Part of her request would also cover project management services, education, and training. Lawson says Indiana cannot sufficiently handle the vote tampering threat posed by Russia and China without upgrading. But her request would still leave a few dozen counties without that necessary type of voting machine.
John Schwannis, Connie Lawson says it's critical she get this money to help counties replace machines. But the request isn't for all of those machines to be replaced. So is that contradictory?
Well, it's
yes.
Yeah, probably. It's a different, I don't know if contradictory. It's an odd framing of the issue. Let's say that. I mean, elections are kind of a big thing. They sort of are the underpinning of everything, as we've, I think, noticed in recent weeks with some of the discussions of voting irregularities or out fraud in other states. So that's, let's stipulate that's important, and we need to have that as the bedrock of our democracy in this state. Then you get down to the cost, and of course, the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU, which studies these things, says Indiana's fix would be about $22 to $37 million, I believe. By the calculation, if you do the math on what the Secretary of State is suggesting, where 10% of the existing machines that are plagued by or don't have the capability of a paper trail, 10% of those would be replaced at a cost of $6 million. So you do the math. She pegs it at, what, $60 or $70 million. Either way, why I say this is an odd construct is it's sort of like saying if this were a public health issue and there were some pandemic that was looming, you said, well, guess what? We've got to inoculate Hoosiers to protect them because this could be devastating. And that's why I want 10% of the funding for 10% of for Hoosiers to be vaccinated. Gee, how do the other 90% feel? The one thing that may happen here that may save the day, there was federal legislation that was waylaid by the Trump administration that would have thrown more money at this and would have required a paper trail in all federal elections, which basically means every election. Now that there will be a different majority in the U.S. House and the Senate seem more amenable to this, again, at the federal level, maybe she will be able to get her machines and on the federal dime.
Well,
as
I mean, she did get
dime.
A federal grant and didn't put any of that money aside for machines. And I just want to point out that one way to spend $1 billion one-time payment or upfront one-time money might be on infrastructure for elections and not trails. I mean, I'm just saying it's not built into the
you can't
base.
Just say and the word infrastructure and then it counts as a road.
could we charge a toll?
I'm still trying to figure out how broadband and trails fit into transportation.
It's the information superhighway.
Right.
Absolutely. When you find $1 billion one-time investment, I think it would be great when we're talking about the bedrock of our democracy.
Oh, you're going to agree with me this time. No, I think you can make up. All right. I don't know.
I'm trying my best here. I think investing in our election integrity would be a great way of spending some of that money, but that's just
me. Yeah, can you say this is critical and then say a little bit of it, though?
So during that hearing, she actually did a demonstration of a machine and then the paper, the paper record of it. That machine still has to be approved by the federal government. So they still have to go through, they have to build it, and then they have to go run it through this federal process, which takes up, they're going to be strained getting that many machines through that process and built and in county.
But doesn't that mean we're just pushing it even
but
further down the road
after that?
There are
machines that already provide that, and a bunch of counties have them. Yeah. She was looking at an add-on that hasn't been approved yet, but there are machines
just,
out there.
That's how this goes. I mean, we have electronic poll books in some counties, not others. We know that it's more secure, and we know that it's better when the entire system knows when you've voted and not just that one precinct that's writing off. So, but it just takes several cycles to get all of that out of there and get the new stuff in.
Well, the Department of Homeland Security Secretary is saying this is a national security threat, so I don't know if I want to wait a couple of election cycles.
I want everybody who thinks that voting machines are getting hacked by Russians to go work one election, and you're plugging a little phone line that's connected to a printer,
although
and everybody, and the average age is 85 years old.
Does it matter if it's actually happening, or does it matter if voters don't want to vote because they don't trust that their vote is secure? I mean, in the end, that matters more to me.
Well, hackers were able to turn one of these machines, literally the screen, this is not a joke, into a Pac-Man game, done at the behest of one of the think tanks that had been looking at this. So they are hackable in some fashion.
Connect to it. I think we've put a lot into this is a really vulnerable system. And whether that's been messaged in a way that discourages voters, which is an important issue, just the perception of the integrity of that system is very important. I agree with your point, Nikki. But I think it's been a little overblown in the Russia-China issues we've had the last couple of years.
Well, a report this week says the Trump camp is mulling a re-election bid that does not include Vice President Mike Pence.
The story in Vanity Fair says President Trump recently met with advisors for a 2020 strategy session, and one of the strategies they discussed is apparently whether Mike Pence should be replaced on the ticket. The report says advisors showed Trump polling that suggests while Pence doesn't hurt the president's coalition, he doesn't add much to it. That comes after a recent New York Times report that said President Trump had been asking if Pence could be trusted.
Mike O'Brien, idle speculation, or should the vice president be worried?
I wouldn't encourage people to get their political news from Vanity Fair, first of all. I think everyone should rely on the fact that Mike Pence is going to be on the ticket, and I know that because that's what the president said when he was asked at a press conference when Mike Pence was standing there. Now, whether or not they had this conversation is a matter of strategy. They should have that conversation. You should look at this before you relaunch a re-election campaign. And are all these moving parts, whether it's the leadership of an agency or your vice president, is this the team we want going into a re-election?
Yeah, to that end, isn't that what every ticket should be doing, looking at what's the best strategy?
Does it show a lot of stability if you're looking to dump your vice president before an election? That's a great question.
We had three lieutenant governors in 1 year here 2 years ago.
And three auditors.
Right. Really well. And no one auditors. Thought the government was unstable.
I think that
depends on who you ask.
Yeah, I don't know
like four auditors.
I'm still wrestling with the notion that it must be so because the president said it at a news conference and is on camera, on record, saying so. Now I'm going to reframe my thinking of how this whole thing works. If that's all it takes to be ironclad, all right,
Let me ask you this, though. Let's just play a little hypothetical and say he does decide to move on and run with somebody else. Who wants that job if they're going to be dumped at the first sign of trouble?
I mean, honestly, who would? Because you can't get a person who's been more loyal than Pence has.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, would it really, really, really look bad? I mean, of anybody who's above question, it seems like it should be Mike Pence, right?
I think we've seen that the president will change his mind as quickly as he can tweet, so I'm not sure.
All right, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Phil Johnson, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I do want to say something. On a previous show a few weeks ago, we made some light of a statement from Senator Dennis Cruz about wanting to spend more time with his family. We shouldn't have done that, and I do apologize. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.